pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
The Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk
106.5. Good Friday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it. Friday. It's finally Friday. 251-343-0106. Let us hear from you. That's how you interact with the program. Todd Stacey coming up here in about a half hour. Also on the program this morning, Austin Sidwell, who I'm been watching this first congressional district race as it's unfolded over the last probably about 8-9 months, and I think Austin has done a decent job getting out there, and he's not one of these guys who's kind of a single issue guy. He could kind of talk about a wide range of things, but he's a candidate. What I still predict will be the so-called 6-1 map. More on that in a moment. We had some developments in the last, overnight. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, will be with us at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour as well. We'll get his reaction to what has been taking place here in the last, 24 hours on our legislative representation, our districting maps and whatnot. And the 11th Circuit yesterday, split decision. But they stated the injunction on the state Senate map that was imposed. So let's start from the beginning here. In the Milligan case, Alabama was sued. I think one of the plaintiffs was the NAACP, claiming racial gerrymandering, claiming unfair representation, and it goes to, you guessed it, the three-judge panel led by Anna Manasco, who has just become just the villain in this whole episode, I'm telling you. We know what happened. Louisiana versus Calais gets heard in the Supreme Court. State of Alabama, in reaction to that, says, hey, this map that was imposed on us by the federal courts, we want to redo. We want to retry. So the federal courts declared Alabama's state Senate map about a year and a half ago to be unconstitutional. And they put it up to a special master to draw a state Senate map. Well, the special master, I guess he took submissions, and there was, I can't imagine what this kid's social life was like, in Russell County in a place called Seal. The county seat used to be in Russell County. Now it's in Phoenix City. Submitted a map. A 17-year-old high school student submitted a map. And guess what? That was the map that the state of Alabama had federally imposed upon it. The young man has since gone on to bigger and better things at the University of Alabama. He's a college freshman there now. But once Louisiana was decided, the state of Alabama asked for a do-over. So essentially the biggest change in the state Senate map were a couple of state Senate districts around Montgomery. Now, what Democrats had wanted were more favorable districts, I think, in the Huntsville area, but they got Montgomery instead. And it essentially drew out Senator Will Barfoot and made his district more Democrat. But it took Democrats away from the seat held by Kirk Hatcher and made it more Republican. So what did they do? They swapped seats. essentially. Kirk Hatcher is going to run in the newly drawn district Barfoot was in, and then the newly drawn district that Hatcher was in, Barfoot was going to run, because they just looked at the numbers, each of them, and saw a better path to the state senate. But last night, well, we'll skip a step here. State of Alabama goes to this three-judge panel and says, hey, in light of this high court decision, let's have a do-over on this. And of course, the three-judge panel, no. Y'all are a bunch of racists. You're going to stay with this map, you racist legislators, you racist state. We don't see any reason. This doesn't change anything. And don't even bother us anymore. Well, they didn't say that part. But so the state senate map, and there was such an outsized focus on this, I think, relative to the congressional map in this last special session. But they wanted to set up, put in place, laid some groundwork for the possibility that the lower court's decision would get reversed or put on hold or whatever, and they could have special elections to determine who the nominees would be for the map. The 2021 map that the Alabama legislature drawn for its state senate districts. Well, the lower court said no, but last night the 11th Circuit 2-1 decision said we're going to stay this injunction and y'all may proceed with the 2021 map, which is that's a big deal in that it's a big deal obviously to people who live in Montgomery. You're going to have a different state senate districts. You're going to have different elections. But it just kind of shows you the where this I think a series of L's that Manasco, Terry Moore, and Stanley Marcus are going to be taking on this entire redistricting fight. It's the same gavam as on Dale Jackson's show yesterday. It said, you know, the evidence they cited that Alabama can't be trusted to draw its own state senate, congressional maps, etc., is based on what happened in the 1960s. They're going to go back generations before many of us were alive to make this argument. And like I said, it's an elitist argument. But it's just nothing but a power grab. It's nothing but a partisan judge, I believe, wanting to retain seats for Democrats. I'm telling you, if you want to do fairness, if we can operate on this assumption that there are, let's say, 1/3 of the state is Democrat, 2/3 of the state is Republican. If you don't like the 6-1 map, then you draw 7 congressional districts that are 66% Republican, 33% Democrat. Why does it have to be? Why does the ratio have to be congressional members if we're trying to get a true depiction of the state throughout these congressional districts? Tell me. And no one's, like I said, the arguments are very shallow. I tell you what the dumbest argument about all this is. And I bet you somebody's texted on the text line, one of the left-wing texters. But I'd be willing to bet you And somebody said, well, this was Anna Manasco and these other judges. Two of these judges were Trump appointed. So they must be right-wing nut jobs. That just, it's devoid of any sort of critical thinking. Because you could look at the body of work here and know that this is not, you know, someone who's a constitutionalist. This is someone who really has an, I mean, just the verbiage in some of these opinions tells you that there is like this stinging bitterness aimed at the state of Alabama, the Alabama legislature, the lawyers for the state of Alabama, the attorney general office, that this isn't exactly Federalist Society conservatism here that's in these federal courts right now in Alabama. You always had that. We've had Byron Thompson most of my life. Who was sort of the left-wing bulwark. Striking down things, the Alabama legislature would do, putting holds on. But he would play ball within the system. When the abortion decision came out, when Dobbs came out, he immediately, like almost 2 days later, after Dobbs was handed down, lifted the injunction on, well, they didn't have to go to the 11th Circuit or the Supreme Court. He lifted the injunction on Alabama's abortion ban. He said, this is the law of the land. Unlike this three-judge panel that's going down kicking and screaming. Frank Johnson was the federal judge who kind of stood in the way of a lot of what George Wallace was trying to do. I mean, and you know, that's he and Wallace, Judge Johnson and Wallace went to war repeatedly over the years. But you've always had like a federal judge that kind of, I don't know, bird dogs the Alabama legislature and the governor. And what we got now is just like a Dollar General version of it, I guess. Just a self-appointed do-gooder. But that happened yesterday. That's a big deal. I think it's a sign of things to come. That you can't, you got to give a little. I can tell you, the judges on this three-judge panel, they're done. I mean, they're not moving up to the 11th Circuit, or they're not getting any nominations. This is a product of the Doug Jones hangover. Richard Shelby, a big part of it, too, by the way. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. We'll get some other things on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Friday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. Text line if you want to be in touch with me, your show host for the next 2 hours and change. 251-343-0106. Coming up in here in the next segment, we'll talk to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Capital Journal, and we'll hear about what he's got coming up on his program tonight. See here, I can get to the text line. We'll mess with that in a minute. But anyway, we're still talking about, I guess, his court decision yesterday telling the lower court we're gonna stay your injunction on the state senate map, and you shall proceed with your 2021 state senate map that was drawn. It was, remember, guys, what had happened? We had COVID, and that caused a delay in the census. And then they had to have a special session, and they had to go about it. And we got a late map, and then the lawsuits come. There's a whole entire industry that just sues. Well, they wait for the legislatures around the country to make a map, and then they just sue, and then they settle, and they get something out of it. It's a corrupt, perversely incentivized system that we have. Ultra runner in the span of human history, has a left of center judge ever swerved hard right after an appointment? Why is the left immune from this epidemic, and how do they pick them? Because you just play the game. You're right. You play the game, but like big law culture, and that's where she came from, Manasco. And, like, she clerked for Bill Pryor, apparently. But you play the game. And then that's how you get – and then once you're a federal judge, you're free to do whatever. And there's just they tend to be, like, activist judges. But you're – I mean, there's probably some ultra runner that have moved to the right. But, you know, the ones that we really pick up on are – ones that really impact us the most. DEI texter, what's wrong with the rule of law? Oh, I almost forgot. Anyone who defies MAGA is suddenly liberal. Well, yeah, but apparently she's wrong, because the Supreme Court and 11th Circuit are involved here, DEI texter. I mean, that's your rule of law. Well, the rule of law, the system that we have, our federal courts, say these judges are wrong. So you tell me what's wrong with the rule of law. Because we could talk about that and your just like strange perspective on what is the rule of law. I mean, a very subjective thing. But what we can objectively say is, why is this judge having her edicts struck down? Maybe she's just a bad judge. Wouldn't the adults have to come in the room and say, no, 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 Judge, this is what the law is now. You can write your petty, snipey little opinions, and you can cast aspersions on the Alabama legislature, but we'll be the adults here. Jason, good morning, Jeff. And Parker Griffith is the official Democrat response. Is mommy issues now the official radical BLM liberal response? Mommy issues is the basement dweller, sad human being response of the program. Mike, has there been a federal judge to get disbarred and removed from the bench because of lack of legal integrity and honesty? It's getting to where Anna Manasco could be considered for the first. No, there are far worse federal judges out there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we played lawfare. It was like lawfare whack-a-mole when Trump first got in office. Remember, you would just have a random lower court judge put an injunction on something going on that the Trump administration. It totally was not like relevant to that judge's federal district. And the Supreme Court had to finally say, we can't do this. There's got to be some kind of jurisdictional relevance to what you're doing here. Somebody can't just wake up, go sue in federal court in Utah, put an injunction on an executive order of the president, then we got to figure this out in a little more coherent way. Terry, that's from the last program. 251-343-0106. We're still talking about Iran. The peace deal. It's like Lucy in the football. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Israel, what's going on with Israel? Why is every time we get close, Israel decides to go on a bombing campaign against Lebanon? What are we supposed to think the takeaway is there? And then there's Jared Hudson versus Barry Moore. That's heating up. How many of you out there remotely interested in that? Let me know on the text line, 251-343-0106. All right, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the program? 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Still come on the program. Also, Sidwell is candidate for the 1st Congressional District. That's in the 10 o'clock hour. Then our returning champion, as we do every Friday, State Senator Chris Elliott. He missed a week last week. And the week before, I believe he was a Thursday guest. So, we're back on our standard operating procedure. But joining us now, you can read his website. He's the publisher of Alabama Daily News, Inside Alabama Politics. Also, the host of Capital Journal at Alabama Public Television, Todd Stacey, is with us. Todd, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing well. Man, does it ever slow down in this racket?
It does not. It does not. I mean, I was joking the other day, you know, we got finished with the regular session, which was a slog. That was a big one, right? I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on. You think we're going to get a little break, then Calais happens, special session with all that craziness, flooding and everything. Our studio still smells like a junior high locker room. And then now all these other court rulings. So, I mean, it's really kind of hard to keep up with it all, but we've been trying our best.
Well, how before we get into the meaty, substantive stuff, how is the trans? I guess there's a transition now going with the State House.
Yeah, I mean, our space won't be ready until probably late December or January, and that's fine. But we really got to get out of the building. If you stepped in there right now, I mean, I'm about to head that way. The mold is just overwhelming because that first floor got flooded so bad. So we're going to start the process of moving to a temporary space. But yeah, they're starting to take down the marble and all, you know, the hallways are, it looks like a construction zone. And so they have started the process, which was why I was curious with all these rulings. And we're obviously waiting on the Supreme Court, whether another special session might be possible. It sounds like, that's very unlikely. But yeah, I was curious, like, man, how's this building going to stand up for yet another go around?
Well, and you know, I guess they could just meet in the old chamber if they needed to, but you're right. Things seem to be in place to do what they got to do based on what we think is going to happen. Right.
That's right. So I have Attorney General Steve Marshall on the show this week. We actually did the interview yesterday, which, you know, you got to love doing an interview before a court ruling comes out. But it actually holds up. But that's what I was asking him. Part of what I was asking him is there any chance, like, okay, if the Supreme Court agrees with you or the Supreme Court doesn't agree with you, is there any circumstance where you could see the legislature needing to come back and, like, set things right, you know, call another election or set, you know, whatever. And he said no. He said he did not think it was going to be necessary either way. And so I think that's a relief. It sounds like if elections need to be moved, the governor can do that. And he also made it seem like it's just too late to go and try to do an entirely new redistricting plan, which I guess that was the kind of the question out there. So that settles that.
Yeah, and you know, it does seem like I would assume this about what I think I suspect that the Supreme Court is going to do regarding the congressional map. That you know, the governor and she's got lawyers. They kind of have an idea of how this is going to play out, don't they?
I think, but I mean, I've heard from folks that are really torn on what the Supreme Court might do, and part of the consideration here is how late in the cycle that it is, right? I mean, we've already had an election, and we're kind of in the middle of this other one. You know, the governor has delayed it, delayed qualifying, and all that.
Well, we would just that special election still goes on, but you would just use the old map, right?
Yeah, right. So I just don't know. I mean, nobody really knows what the court's going to do. It was a little bit of a surprise what the 3-judge panel did. I mean, they really were very forceful in that ruling. I didn't expect that after Calais. But it seems almost like they, you know, they're kind of sticking by their guns, agree or disagree. But they're almost like asking the Supreme Court, hey, you know, if you feel different about this, then you need to spell it out. Because in that order that allowed Alabama to proceed with its, you know, its chosen maps, the majority didn't say anything. They just said, hey, these orders are rescinded. You know, it's reverted back down to the 3-judge panel. And they didn't have any kind of opinion, any language. There was a dissent from the liberals on the court, but nothing from the 6 in the majority. So it's almost like they're going to need to say something, and that could get really interesting.
Well, there's in the 3-judge panel's injunction, I mean, you know, it came out Tuesday morning. The verbiage in that was just, it seemed very petty and, you know, casting aspersions on the legislature that I don't think that's like, you know, to me, there's clearly like an axe to grind here.
I don't think there's any question that the court and the state of Alabama, whether that's the legislature, the attorney general, or whatever, maybe combined, are in sharp disagreement. And yeah, I think there's some feelings going on.
Because I mean, and maybe I just live in the textbook, you know, schoolhouse sort of mentality here, but you would expect the federal courts to be kind of above the fray, that they wouldn't engage in this petty back and forth. The legislature is a political body. They rely on elections. They have to put on a show for voters. You get it. The court's lifetime appointment. It doesn't matter what they think of you. Why do you need to go with the sort of invective that you're employing here in your opinions?
I didn't really read it that way. I think the way I read it was, there was nothing in Calais or nothing in the order related to Alabama that really changed their minds. And
well, they're calling the legislature racist. The intentional decision to dilute minority votes with a veneer of legislative regularity. There's all kinds of these little petty snipes in that preliliminary injunction like that. That's calling essentially saying that the legislature woke up. Our Governor Ivey woke up, called a special session, and told them boys down at the legislature to go draw a racist map, is the way I took it.
Yeah, well, I guess you can take it that way. I'm saying, based on Calais, and you know, can't have race used in drawing maps. And I think what the court has said is that race was used to draw this map, which is also an argument that I've seen used on the right, that why are y'all going to reinstitute this map that used race to draw it, which is unconstitutional under Calais?
Right. Well, I mean, do we? Because here's the question: like, if African American voters in this state were Republican, would we be having this discussion?
No.
Well,
no.
How is it a racial motivation here with the maps they're drawing?
Well, I think that's what the Supreme Court needs to speak to, because in states like Alabama, Democrat black votes are akin to Democrat votes. I mean, it's like, 90-something percent? And so you can use partisanship to draw a map, and it wouldn't be any different than using race to draw a map, right, if you're trying to get a partisan outcome. And so the two are kind of indistinguishable. And so, yeah, I think the Supreme Court really does need to speak to that. I think the Calais decision was important and clear, but it didn't cover everybody. And it didn't cover the court needs to, let us know is the state allowed to do this or not? Clearly there's some animus with the three judge panel, but I think the court needs to speak to it. So I'm really hoping we get some clarity, because
it's a do-over. So what we need to know now is what is the protocol? We have vacated this decision and it's been remanded, but we're at this state right now as if we haven't had any due process going forward. So what are we allowed to do? We just don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, I get the kind of process part. I mean, they remanded it back down to the lower court. I think that's just kind of typical. That's how the process works. But obviously that court has not changed its mind. And if the Supreme Court really feels like, this is proper and the state was right, they need to spell it out and not just have a silent order.
Well, I don't think they will, because they want to let the process play itself out. They want to have, you're going to present new evidence, new witnesses, you're going to have a new trial, you're going to go through the motions, and you're going to, and that's, then the judges base their decision or their opinion or whatever on that you have to throw all this away that we've done up to this point, and they don't seem to be willing to let that go.
Well, you're right that the evidence that they used was old, right? Like it was, they used in the order or the injunction, they basically restated a bunch of the evidence that went through in the original trial. So there wasn't a whole lot of new information. I mean, except how Calais applies to it, which fine. But yeah, I mean, we're in a real pickle right now. I mean, which map does it use? It has huge implications. Obviously, down there in Mobile, is the district going to be split like the court ordered map was? Is it going to be what the legislature drew? I really couldn't tell you, and I've been pretty bad at predicting things during this whole process.
Well, it does seem like this court's got an axe to grind, and it's just not what I expected, and I don't know what I expect. Maybe I'm just naive, and I live in this like world of like, hey, you think of a federal judge, and the federal judge is above all this politics. They're just going to look at things, but there's like the language here is just. It's not what I would have expected in reading an opinion from a federal court.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get some answers soon. But I do encourage people to listen and watch Attorney General Steve Marshall. I'm asking him some of these very questions. I'm not a lawyer. I know you're not a lawyer. Like, he makes some very good points. He explains some things. Because one of the things I'm trying to get at is like, okay, what happens practically if the state prevails? Like, what happens? What happens if the state does not prevail? Like, what practically can we expect? Because there is just a lot of confusion out there about when the election is, what we're voting on, what district I'm in. And I mean, for those of us who follow this stuff on an hourly basis, that's one thing. We're even confused, but imagine just a typical voter. So I would really like some clarity, some finality to what we're actually voting on and what's a pretty important election.
Hey, tell me something. What new Montgomery State Senate districts? What are you expecting there? Anything that we haven't seen the last couple of cycles?
No, I mean it. So you're talking about the ruling that just came out
last night. So we go back to the old, and it's just going to be Barfoot and Hatcher going back to their original districts, right?
Correct. And so neither one of them is really impacted. They'll just run for the seats they currently have. They were kind of swapping. The one person that it hurts is Tabitha Eisner, who was going to challenge Barfoot, but now she's going to live in the district where Kirkhatcher lives, and I don't expect her to challenge Kirkhatcher. So I think, you know, it's kind of status quo. But it neither harms Hatcher or harms Barfoot. I think they'll both be elected again to the state senate. And that ruling and that, I never really understood it. Like, the practical impact was they just swapped districts, and it doesn't have any kind of impact on voters and representation. So I wasn't really surprised to see the court do what it did. I just wish it wouldn't have taken so long, because, you know, we already had an election, and presumably they're going to have another one, I would assume, on August 11th.
Well, here's something I want to throw at you, another hypothetical. I know you love this, but I think, like, we talked about this last week, Todd. Democrat turnout was really, really energized relative to the Republican turnout.
Yeah.
And if we get, in this hypothetical, if we get a 6-1 map, and Shamari Figures runs against Rhett Marquess, or anybody. But Shamari Figures, I think, is going to have a puncher shot at winning that seat back, because, and you and I talked about this a little bit, and it goes back to Jay Love and Bobby Bright, but, you know, is it entirely possible that he's going to, just by virtue of being a sitting member of Congress, is going to raise a bunch of money? He's not out for the count. This isn't going to be your typical AL2 race that we've seen since Martha Roby took it.
That's right. And because, remember, yes, this is a legislatively drawn map, but it was technically what the legislature was considering an opportunity district. Now, it was not nearly the opportunity, quote unquote, that the court ended up mandating from the special master. That's the district that Figures has right now. But it's still not the old second district that Roby represented, that included Autauga and Elmore, and just was like an R plus, you know, 15 district. It's not that. I don't know what the number is, but you're right. There's a shot. And okay, yeah, I worked that race, J Love, Bobby Bright, and it was the Democrat turnout that made the difference. That was Barack Obama's election year. And so, you know, most any other year, that district would have gone Republican, but because of turnout, and it wasn't just Democratic turnout, it was Republicans staying home.
Right.
And that could have an impact. There's no question the Democrats are going to be energized this November. And that, it just, everything lines up for that, including all this redistricting stuff, right? That hasn't really fired up. But what are, you know, how are Republicans going to counter that? There was clearly no enthusiasm in the primary. I think part of that's the top of the ticket. That's a, you know, kind of a known thing. But they're going to have to figure something out. I mean, midterms are always bad for the party in power, and so that's no difference here. So, yeah, I agree with you that Republicans cannot take that race for granted.
Yeah, I don't think they can either. Todd, folks want to find out what's going on Alabama Daily News, or they want to know what's on your show. Let them know.
Well, I mentioned the Attorney General. I'm also going to have Congressman Figures on. He's actually on the road. So we're going to have to connect via Zoom. So those are two interesting voices in this whole redistricting legal situation. We're also going to have the fellows from Boys State. Boys State's in Montgomery this week. And so that's a good show tonight, 7:30 on APT.
Todd, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Jeff, be good.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Birmingham.
Sitting here at the Floribam, about to open up a big old can. Good time, unwind, falling out of love in the same dollar. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. So to come on the program, Austin Sidwell, candidate for the 1st Congressional District. That's in about 45 minutes. Then our returning champion in 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott. A lot to get into with him there. A couple of texts we'll get to here before we go to break. I'm all in for Jared Hudson. A new blood brings fresh ideas and the possibilities of forging better relationships will bring a better Senate. He's really got to really make up some ground in South Alabama. I'm telling Barrymore, if you just kind of look at the map, Jared Hudson was very strong in the Birmingham DMA. Now, how low of a turnout will we see next month in the runoff will tell us whether or not, you know, can Hudson really weaponize the Birmingham market and make that vote turn out at a higher pace than North and South, the rest of North Alabama and South Alabama. That's going to be the key. But that's going to be tough to overcome because, I mean, I who would have expected Barry Moore to do so well in the Tennessee Valley? I mean, he dominated the Shoals, the opposite part of the state. Obviously, he's going to win in the Wiregrass, and he's going to do well here. He represented Mobile and Baldwin County in Congress for a Congress. So then where do you make that up? And it's that middle. Now look, the Birmingham DMA often dictates who wins statewide office, but it's just a unique circumstance where Barry Moore did well in Huntsville. Typically, you don't see that. The Mobile candidate does not do well in Huntsville, and the Huntsville candidate does not do well in Mobile. But this case, Barry Moore, is neither Mobile nor Huntsville did well in both. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Or I may simply be a single drop of rain.